Welcome to SCOTUScast, Class Certification and Evidentiary Requirements Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 27, 2013, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Comcast v. Verint. The question in this case was whether a district court properly certified a class action under Rule 23b-3 when the plaintiff's damages model did not attempt to measure only those damages attributable to the antitrust violation that formed plaintiff's theory of the case. In an opinion delivered by Justice Scalia, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that the class action in question was improperly certified under Rule 23b-3. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Thomas, and Alito joined the majority opinion. Justices Ginsburg and Breyer jointly filed a dissenting opinion, which Justices Sotomayor and Kagan joined. To discuss the case, we have Ken Lee, who is a partner at Jenner & Block. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Lee.
For the past several terms, the Supreme Court has issued a series of high-profile opinions that have clarified the contours of class actions. On March 27th, the Supreme Court issued its opinion in Comcast v. Verint, a decision that built upon the blockbuster Walmart v. Dukes opinion from two terms ago, and extends it to the realm of expert testimony and damages. In a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court held that expert witness testimony about whether damages can be determined on a class-wide basis must be rigorously assessed by district courts at the class certification stage. The likely upshot of this ruling is that it will be more difficult to certify a class because defendants will now argue that individualized damages preclude certification. Another practical impact of this decision is that the class cert stage may become more expensive for both sides because they may have to spend more time and money on expert witnesses earlier on in the case. Now, a quick background about the case. Starting in 1998, Comcast began increasing its market share for cable television in the Philadelphia area by acquiring other cable providers and by swapping markets with other cable systems. This strategy is a common practice in the cable industry called clustering. As a result, Comcast allegedly increased its share of subscribers in the Philly area to nearly 70% by 2007. Several Comcast subscribers brought a putative class action suit against Comcast, alleging antitrust violations under the Sherman Act. They allege that Comcast's so-called clustering strategy was not motivated by brotherly love of its customers. Rather, according to plaintiffs, Comcast eliminated competition, raised entry barriers, and increased prices for cable customers. And if there's one thing that Americans want, they want their MPV at very low prices. The plaintiffs offered four theories as to why Comcast's clustering strategy was supposedly anti-competitive. One was that Comcast's clout allowed it to withhold sports programming from satellite providers such as DirecTV. Another theory was that Comcast had too much bargaining power vis-a-vis the content providers. The third theory was that Comcast reduced the level of benchmark competition, which consumers could rely on to compare prices. And the final theory was that Comcast's dominant presence deterred other potential competitors from entering the market. The court ultimately rejected all of these theories except the last one. A key issue in certification was whether plaintiffs had demonstrated that the issue of damages could be ascertained on a class-wide basis. Plaintiffs offered an expert witness who offered a damages theory of what cable prices would have been but for Comcast's clustering strategy. According to the plaintiffs, the but-for prices established by the expert could be applied class-wide. In response, Comcast challenged this expert's analysis and argued that damages could not be resolved on a class-wide basis. Among other things, it turned out that the expert had based his damages analysis on all four theories of anti-competitive effects, and not just the one theory that the court had ultimately allowed. Nonetheless, the district court certified the class under Rule 23b-3. Court ruled that there is a common methodology available to measure and quantify damages on a class-wide basis. The Third Circuit, in a divided opinion, affirmed. It rejected Comcast's argument that plaintiff's expert witnesses' damage methodology was flawed. to delve into that issue, the Third Circuit ruled, would impermissibly involve a determination of the ultimate merits of the case. In other words, if a district court had to determine whether an expert witness's methodology is sound, it would be moving beyond the procedural question of whether a class could be certified and would involve a determination of the actual merits of the case. The Supreme Court reversed in a 5-4 decision authored by Justice Scalia. Joining him were the more conservative members of the court, the Chief Justice and Justices Thomas, Alito, and Kennedy. Citing to Walmart v. Dukes, Justice Scalia emphasized that the line between class certification and merits is often blurry and may overlap. He further noted that the court had previously held that the party moving for class certification has the evidentiary burden to show that the case is amenable to class treatment. Rule 23 is not a mere pleading standard, but rather it requires the plaintiff to provide evidence that there are in fact common questions and that they predominate over individual ones. Here, the plaintiffs fail to meet that burden with respect to their damages analysis. As noted previously, the damages model was based on all four theories of anti-competitive impact, and the expert did not isolate the damages to the one theory that the district court had allowed to proceed. The Supreme Court held that the Third Circuit erred in ruling that the plaintiff's expert adequately provided a method to measure and quantify damages on a class-wide basis. The Third Circuit had failed to probe deeper to determine whether that damages methodology was, quote, a just and reasonable inference or speculative. The Supreme Court held that the validity of this damages methodology was not a merits issue that could be deferred until the later stages of the case. Rather, district courts must rigorously analyze expert witnesses' methodology at the class certification stage to determine whether it can in fact show that damages can be proved on a class-wide basis. In short, district courts must give a hard look at the expert testimony at the class cert stage. The four more liberal justices dissented. In a joint dissent authored by Justices Ginsburg and Breyer, they argued that the writ of certiorari was improvidently granted, and that as a substantive matter, the majority erred because ignored factual findings made by the district court. The dissenters tried very hard to minimize the import of this decision. Comcast v. Barron is an important decision that builds upon what the Supreme Court established in Walmart v. Dukes. The party moving for class cert has a heavy burden to provide evidence, and not just unsupported allegations, that the case is amenable for class treatment. Comcast essentially extends the holding of Walmart v. Dukes to damages and to expert witnesses. The Supreme Court is directing district courts to rigorously review an expert's methodology and reliability, including in the context of damages, if that issue is relevant to class cert. District courts cannot punt and say that it's a merits issue if it has bearing on whether a class should be certified. Lower courts will likely flesh out exactly how much scrutiny of expert witnesses is required. At oral argument, there was an extended discussion of whether the formal Daubert or Rule 702 evidentiary standard would be required of expert witnesses at the class cert stage. The Supreme Court refrained from setting a specific standard for district courts to apply, but it directed them to give a hard look. And it makes good sense to do so. Class cert will often determine the fate of the case. Class action lawsuits rarely go to trial, and so district courts shouldn't certify a case quickly and then sort it out later. The defense bar and businesses may welcome this decision because it makes it more difficult to get a class certified. More defendants will now likely argue that a class cannot be certified because individualized damages issues overwhelm common ones. But this decision also means that class cert stage will be more hotly contested and it will become more expensive because both sides will have to rigorously vet their experts and their opinions at the class cert stage. One interesting side note about the slip opinion is that the majority refers to the dissenting opinion as the majority opinion. It may be a typo, but perhaps the majority opinion started off as a dissenting opinion and one of the justices flipped sides. That's sheer speculation on my part, but fortunately, there's no requirement to rigorously review my speculative analysis.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.